It's the week 16 edition of the Horse and Round podcast, the holiday week edition, the Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Festivus edition. Happy Festivus to you, Andy. Unfortunately, my poll is sitting in my office at home. I didn't bring it in to record this. I'll have it in on our Friday show when I'm sitting in with you.
You and Crystal, our loyal listener to Orange and Blue 760, were going back and forth over to who had the bigger Festivus poll, didn't you?
Yeah. Mine is small. It's actually only a desktop poll.
It's a good call.
Big one. Well, I'm out of places to put it in the thing. Most of my holiday decor is kitschy, and I got a lot of stuff. Like, I have a whole tree, a Christmas tree, that is sports and pop culture ornaments. You know, there's a Shannon Sharp ornament. There's a Clinton Portis, former Bronco, current Washington radio analyst ornament for him. A lot of Atlanta Braves ornaments.
Portis is doing analyst work?
Yeah.
Really?
Broadcasting. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, Clinton Portis has got a mic now.
Are you shocked by that?
Nothing shocks me anymore.
Continue,
he's got
please.
Hey, look, we all know that Clinton Portis has a big personality.
Yes, perfect. Perfect personality.
Okay, he doesn't speak the King's English.
I'm not worried
That's
about
fine.
Speaking the King's English. I'm more worried about, because God knows I don't either. I'm just saying, expressing your thought. Maybe he got better his last years of Washington. You could explain that. But
he's pretty entertaining. I've enjoyed listening to him when I've had the chance to.
Well, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah.
I think it's fair that I'm a little surprised. Is it not?
I think it's fair.
Considering his time in Denver?
But he's matured. We all grow.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Remember,
he came
to Denver. He was 21 years old. He's grown since
You
then.
Can't hold it against me that I'm surprised that Clinton Portis, of all the Broncos you and I have mutually covered, is the guy with the podcast and going into broadcasting.
Well, at the same time, though, I did think he had a really energetic and engaging personality. So that part of it, if you can kind of polish off the rough edges a little bit, then you've got something that can be channeled into broadcasting. And certainly Clinton Portis, when he's talking, you listen because he's fun and he's energetic. He was that when he was here. He was that in Washington. And as he developed in Washington after that 2004 trade, he became a team leader there as well. He's meant an awful lot to that franchise.
Fair enough. I looked forward very much to his weekly press conferences. Now, we didn't get all the characters like he busted out in Washington, but we didn't know which Clinton we were going to get week to week. And I can remember him coming in still having some McDonald's fresh in his mouth.
Yes.
I can remember him coming in and looking to screw. I will say this. Nobody gave us a more positive, even temper or mood than Clinton. Clinton, because he was around in the time of what? Who were the quarterbacks? Did he and Jay cross paths? I just know
that. For a year.
Yeah.
He was here for a year of four different starting quarterbacks, of course. One of them was a play out the string game when you locked up the seed. That was Jerry Jackson, but that was 2003. Jake Plummer, Danny Cannell, Steve Berline. And then the year before it was Brian Greasy and Steve Berline. By the way, that's Andy Lindahl of Orange and Blue 760. I didn't introduce you properly.
I'm a little sick too, so hopefully everybody will just cut us some slack. We're recording in a studio where all the mics are live. So I can't hide my little coughs and sniffles the way I normally could.
That's all right. You know, we all have our own windscreens now.
Yeah, what color is yours?
Bright red.
Yeah? So that I know Andrew Mason's been here if I see that.
Yeah, and I nearly forgot it the first 2 days. We have been given our own personal microphone windscreens, in part because of whatever this super germ, super bug is that is going around right now. So we're trying to be a little more hygienic because the studio sometimes can be a germ den.
I will tell you this. I've been in the Clear Channel studios where you and I are recording right now. I've been a member of this radio conglomerate for 20 years, going back to 99. So coming up on 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen one cold rip and take everybody down with it like this thing has.
Yeah.
And for those wondering what it is, it's if you hear Dave Logan on the call of the last home game.
He's in the throes of it.
Right, in the Jets. That was the start of it, and we've all been trying to get away from it since and unsuccessfully.
And we've all dealt with it at some point, and there's actually two bugs going around because there's that bug, and then there's also the gastrointestinal bug.
Yeah, I've avoided that.
I wasn't able to avoid that. That hit me late last week.
That was kind of the team bug, though, wasn't it?
It hit me later than the team, but my wife also had it.
Oh,
she had it before I did. So it's going around a lot of different places right now.
Somehow we've gotten to from Festivus to stomach bugs, which maybe the two go together depending on what your Festivus meal is.
Well, that's part of the airing of grievances. I've got a lot of problems with the fact that we've got all these bugs going around.
Yeah, in time for Christmas as you hop on a plane so you can contain them all in a tiny cylinder and fly out to Washington.
Recirculated air, baby. Recirculated air at 35,000 feet. Whew.
What are you expecting from the guys this week? More of the effort that we've seen before? Or are you curious? Will you wait and hold judgment until we see who the starter is?
I think the effort's going to be there regardless of whether it's going to be Paxton Lynch or Brock Osweiler quarterback. I think on the defensive side, there is a great deal of investment and pride and desire to be the number one defense in the league this year. And that's something that I've heard from multiple guys. Having that top ranking matters. So I don't think you're going to see any lack of effort, I think any lack of intensity from that side of the ball. They've only given up one touchdown in the last two games. It was on a drive that started at midfield. In fact, even if you include the disastrous Dolphins game, they've allowed four touchdowns on defense this month in three games. Only two of them began in the opponent's territory. And one of those two was off of the onside kickoff in Miami. So it's a field position game. If you give this defense good field position to work with, they're going to get the job done time and time again. So if the offense can at least avoid the big turnover, the big mistake on Sunday in Washington, I think the defense is going to have another strong game, both in yardage and on the scoreboard. I think it'll be there. The question is, if you change quarterbacks, what happens to the offense, and what direction does that go? Of course, because we saw how Paxton Lynch struggled against Oakland, and that was a shaky pass defense. Washington's pass defense is much better than Oakland's.
Yeah, the Redskins are a team that were vying for a playoff spot just till a couple weeks ago. Now, as you talk to Brian Mitchell, and we'll hear from him later on in the podcast, I mean, Washington fans are probably more beside themselves than Denver fans at this point because they had their quarterback. They thought they had more things known to them at this point.
And the thing is, the Washington fans know what it's like to go through that long-term quarterback carousel. We were talking about this on Wednesday on 1st and 10 at 10, how they've been through, I believe, 23 starting quarterbacks to get to Kirk Cousins since Mark Rippon. It's been a long-term process. They've cycled through the Heath Schulers and Gus Frerotts. Remember, they briefly had Trent Green, and then they let him go in free agency. Bragg Johnson, Jeff George, Patrick Ramsey, a future Bronco, as it turned out. He was drafted by Washington. Jason Campbell, Mark Brunell. Donovan McNabb was briefly there. Remember that?
Yep.
The ex-Gator quarterbacks that Steve Spurrier brought in back in 02 and 03, Danny Werfel, Shane Matthews. That's a team that has been on a long-term quarterback carousel. And so now you've got Kirk Cousins, who's playing well, who I would argue is a reason why they're sitting there with six wins rather than, say, two or three, given all the injuries they've had on both sides of the ball, whether you're talking about Jordan Reed robbing them of a probably their most consistent target, or losing Jonathan Allen, a rookie who Brian Mitchell thought that Jonathan Allen was their best defensive player before he went down, the rookie out of Alabama. So you've got upwards of 20 players on injured reserve right now for that team. And you have a receiving core that was hit in free agency, and they get bring in Terrell Pryor, and he gets hurt. And yet Kirk Cousins has managed to kind of keep things together despite injuries all around the team, despite injuries on the offensive line.
Yeah,
and now there's a possibility he may not be back with Washington for the 2018 season. And you can see why fans are frustrated, because fans are viewing it in the long-term prism of we went through all these quarterbacks over all these years, and now we have this guy. Why would we let him go?
Why are they going to let him go? Because I think after 2 years of playing the franchise tag game, and we talked to Chris Cooley, the former Redskins tight end who's a radio analyst now, and a guy that's very honest about the situation, he said, here's the deal. He likes Kirk Cousins a lot. But he said he wouldn't doubt if Kirk wants to leave. He thinks Denver would be very desirable to Kirk, as a matter of fact. But when you've been tagged twice, and
he bet on himself.
He did.
Good for him. And barring something disastrous in the next 2 weeks, it's going to pay off for Kirk Cousins handsomely.
Well, and that's just it. Because Cooley said there's no way, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this, no way the Redskins can afford to pay him $30 million if he's not coming back next year. Just can't do it. Can't play the one-and-done game anymore with this guy. Would you say that they've hit that point of no return?
They probably have. And the interesting thing that you mentioned with Chris Cooley, let's say they give the franchise tag to him, which is, I believe, $34 million. So maybe you trade him after you give him the franchise tag, which I imagine might be a potential play if they did do that. But in the meantime, you're locked up with that relative to the salary cap. So if you've given him that sort of tag with that sort of number, then all of a sudden, wow, you can't go out and make the free agent moves that you need to make to improve other areas of the team. And so you're stuck a little bit.
Well, you are, because that money, the minute, and that's why Jeff Legwald used to say to us all the time, the moment if he were a player, he got franchised, and apparently Charles Woodson felt this way too, did it with the Raiders. The moment you send me the paper, I'm sending it back to you. The moment you notify me that I have been franchised, I'm taking my guaranteed money, which counts against your cap as soon as I sign it, and I'm here. I'm with you. I'm showing up. So the moment he signs any kind of franchise tag thing, and which he will do to take his money, because he's the highest paid quarterback in the league because of all this, you are talking about $30 million tied up in your cap. So what are you going to go do? I've never seen anything like it. Why? How did they let it get here?
And the alternatives are not appetizing right now.
On their roster, Colt McCoy. God bless Colt McCoy. But
unless you've got something like a Kirk Cousins, a tag, and then a Kirk Cousins for Jimmy Garoppolo trade in mind. But would that work? I mean, would the Niners do that at this point?
Why would the Niners? I don't know why you would. I mean, Garoppolo's working out. You're starting to build something with him. He's establishing himself in the locker room, no matter how much you may want to change it. I think that says something.
They've scored on 18 of 29 possessions.
For a guy who came from a completely opposite system.
Yeah, you learn on the fly. You can't get a more different scheme in terms of nomenclature than what Kyle Shanahan is running compared to what they're doing in New England. And Jimmy Garoppolo has picked that up, and he's making the guys around him better. I was watching part of that 49er Titan game last weekend, and one of the commentators on the game was making a comment about Marquise Goodwin playing better lately. Well, he's having a big game. He's doing some good things. Well, that's well and good. Jimmy Garoppolo is the guy who's making that happen. Jimmy Garoppolo is throwing him open.
Right. No coincidence that Marquise Goodwin looks good when he's actually got a quarterback.
Yeah.
Funny how the quarterback can make the receivers better.
Hey, that's the way it is in the NFL of 2017.
Okay, you and I live in Denver, obviously. Cover the team. So if you have a top 10 pick, and the Broncos right now are near the bottom of the top 10, are there enough quarterbacks for the quarterback needy team to be drafted in that top 10? In your mind, and I know you've got a lot of research to do, but everything that you've gleaned, because you've told us you like a Baker Mayfield, but yes, it sounds like because of the size, he may follow, people are comparing him possibly to Drew Brees, partially because of stature. And he may fall to the second round for that exact reason. So how many must-have quarterbacks do you think will be in that top 10?
Well, I could still see Baker Mayfield in the top 10 because it'll be fascinating to see what happens to him when you get to the offseason and you start getting into the interview process, because there'll be questions about his off-field stuff. There'll be questions about the gesture against Kansas. And if he doesn't answer those questions properly, it might hurt his draft stock. But on the other hand, I think he's going to be the type of quarterback, based on what I've learned about his study habits and preparation, he will be the type of quarterback that will nail it at the whiteboard. And I think so while there may be some teams that look at some of the off-field stuff and cross him off, there may be other teams that look at the way he studies and prepares, and they get a feel for that, and they may be all in to the point where he's back in the top 10. So then it depends on what Josh Rosen does, what Sam Darnold does. If they come out, then you're talking, I think at minimum you're talking two top 10 quarterbacks. I think you're probably talking four in the top 15. And then the door is open for others. The door is open for a Mason Rudolph to go down to the Senior Bowl and tear it up and move up. He could easily do that. Questions on him kind of revolve around scheme, going from Oklahoma State to the NFL. But if he has a good week at the Senior Bowl, he could shoot up. Luke Falk, I don't know if he could play his way into the first round, but he's another guy that's going to the Senior Bowl that you're also wondering about the scheme going from the Mike Leach air raid to the NFL. A good week down there could boost him maybe into that round two conversation. And then Lamar Jackson is a wild card. That may be, he's the it only takes one team to fall in love with guy.
But it's Teddy Bridgewater of this class, maybe.
But remember with Bridgewater, what killed him was the pro day.
Right.
If the draft had been in early February, I think Teddy Bridgewater goes top 10, top 12. But teams saw the pro day, and some got a little bit scared. And I actually think what happens sometimes is the fact that you have the draft in late April to early May sometimes leads to some bad decisions, because you get farther away from the season, and so you start getting into measurables and workouts, or I think it was John Fox that always called it the underwear Olympics. Whereas if you were drafting in say, February, let's say it was like the NBA, and you know the draft is is anywhere from 3 days
sometimes
to a week after the finals. If the NFL draft was in early February, right after the Super Bowl, and that would put it about a week and a half after the Senior Bowl, 2 weeks after the Shrine Game, and the Collegiate Bowl, then I think you'd have decisions that were based more on film and what they did on the field, and I think you'd have probably less bad decisions.
Yeah, I do think it's going to be interesting to see the way these quarterbacks fall, Andrew. I'm not quite sure what to make of it all. You and I obviously will be curious to see how many must-have guys they come up with. Guys, we know this. They're always going to be overdrafted. They're always going to be drafted higher than they should with a lot of the guys. So we'll see. I'll be curious to see what the analysis is after the season, one of these first mock drafts, and how much it changes before we get to the April selection meetings. Speaking of the draft, because here's the other thing. With Paxton, we're all dying to know, can you show us something in some cases we don't expect or what we'd hoped? But that is some of the worst turf in the NFL out in Washington. And the last thing you need, because I do believe Paxton Lynch is probably 95% in this mix next year. Stranger things have happened, as you've said. But probably a pretty good possibility because of the cost control, the cheapness, you know, the bargain he'll be, he's probably back. And if that's the case, I don't want you rehabbing part of your offseason. I want you ready to go. And I don't know that I'm risking that ankle on that bad turf, but I guess we'll see.
And you mentioned the turf. I'm glad you did. I believe it was Kai Forbath, who kicked in Washington, now with Minnesota, said, quote, "It's dirt and they spray paint it green," earlier this season.
It's brutal. It's not an NFL surface.
Why can't they put turf on it?
I have no idea.
At this point.
I don't know anything.
Right.
You would know better than I. I don't know anything about D.C.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? Part of it is they use the stadium for a lot of different things, a lot of concerts, a lot of events. I mean, they get their money's worth out of FedEx Field. It's a big venue, big concert venue. Good for them. But that ends up taking a toll on the field. Now, I know part of the reason they insist on grass is there are always a few big soccer games there. And they don't want to play those on turf. But at some point, do you have to maybe visit the possibility of when you have those big soccer games, those international matches, just simply trucking the grass in and doing it that way and having the permanent field be turf? Because they're struggling to get it right. And by the way, yeah, I did grow up in the Mid-Atlantic until I was 11. It's pretty amazing that they cannot grow grass properly there. It's a lot easier to grow grass in Maryland, Virginia, than it is in Colorado.
Our guys seem to have it figured out. Maybe we need to let them go give a few notes to the Washington folks.
It's pretty amazing that they cannot get this right in Washington. But there's a long tradition of this. The RFK Stadium field back in the day for the 1983 NFC Championship, they're playing San Francisco, and the field was beaten up. And that field was notoriously bad, even after it ceased to be a baseball venue when the iteration of the Senators that was there in the 60s and early 70s moved to Texas. But it was still a bad field. It was still a beaten-up field. Anyway, the Niners play Washington for the NFC Championship, and they get back to San Francisco, and their equipment manager, in a fit of exasperation, calls up Washington's equipment guys and says, "What on earth is this green stuff that's all over our uniforms, our pants, our jerseys?" And they told him, "Oh, it's green paint. We had to paint the field green."
Golly. Well, how long ago was that?
That was back in
three decades?
January of 84.
Yeah. Still haven't figured it out, huh?
It's a little bit better.
Might want to get someone to take a look at that.
They've changed stadiums, but they still can't get this right for whatever reason. And at some point, you just have to say, okay, fine, we're going to put in some turf. If you want to use the field for as many events as you're using it for, maybe you have to go to turf. But there's a lot of traditionalists, too, that want grass. And the Redskins have never had a home field that is turf. I'm just thinking, RFK was always grass. Griffith, of course, was pre-turf. FedEx Field has always been grass. So, yeah, I can't believe they can't get this right. But, yes, that is something that maybe you think about, the state of that field, perpetually a little bit of a mess.
All right, well, then it'll become, do you play him against the Chiefs? He being Paxton.
We'll see.
He's not played to that point, so we will see.
But then again, Oakland's field didn't, of course, then again, he got hurt on Oakland's field.
Yeah.
But he was healthy.
Well,
healthy with the ankles, at least. He was coming off the shoulder injury, of course.
We'll save it for next week. Merry Christmas, my friend.
Merry Christmas. Happy Festivus.
Yes. I got a lot of problems with you people.
And I have a feeling I'm going to hear about them for 3 hours.
You'll know. I'll come with a list that'll be like the scroll from back in the day. Santa's naughty and nice list, that'll just be you and the airing of grievances.
Or when Cousin Eddie whips out the Christmas list for his family when Clark offers to pay.
Yeah.
Oh, here's a list. Alphabetical, starting with Catherine.
Seriously.
Yeah. Like, he's had that written down the whole time. He was expecting Clark to pay for his Christmas the entire time.
And no feats of strength, by the way. So don't be showing up in just an undershirt, because I know you.
Until you pin me, Festivus is not over.
Well, you know what? It's going to be a long Festivus this year.
Thanks, Sandy. And before we go, want to play this interview that we had with former Washington kickoff and punt returner Brian Mitchell, number 2 all-time in all-purpose yardage, now covers the Redskins out in D.C. A lot of pointed and frank comments about where the Redskins stand. He talks about their offense, talks about their injuries, talks about their first-round pick, Jonathan Allen, who's on injured reserve, and how well he did, but also talks, of course, about Kirk Cousins. He joined us on Wednesday for First and 10 at 10 with Ryan Edwards, myself, and Steve Atwater. So give that a listen.
What's going on, Brian? You're on with Ryan Edwards, Steve Atwater, and Andrew Mason. How are you, sir?
B. Mitch, what's up?
Oh, man. What's up, man? How y'all doing? I'm doing well. How y'all feeling?
Yeah, we're doing great. Man.
We're doing all right. So, you know, we've been, of course, dealing with the frustrations of our season, and I got to imagine the way this season has played out for Washington. I saw your comments following the Dallas Cowboys game. All right, man, here you go. What happened this year? What was your reaction to the way Washington has been playing?
You know what? My reaction is that, you know, injuries happen in football, and that's the whole thing. I don't ever like to hear people using injuries as an excuse. And I think as the year went on, we began to hear that. When I watch games against teams like the Minnesota Vikings and the New Orleans Saints, and I watch how well they played, and they didn't lose the game because of injuries, y'all, because they didn't have good players. They lost the game because they made stupid mistakes. They didn't have great situational football or play calls by the coach. You know, those things lost the game for them. Not the fact they didn't have players on the football field. You know, I think Steve can attest to this. You've seen guys come in that wasn't drafted, you didn't expect much from, but once you got an opportunity, you're like, damn, why wasn't this guy drafted?
Absolutely.
And I saw that type of play throughout the year. Then all of a sudden you go on a two-game stretch where it seemed like nobody gave a damn and nobody really, you know, was out there showing you any type of passion, wasn't giving great effort. And as a former player, I hate seeing that. You know, I graduated from University of Southwestern Louisiana. I was a former quarterback. They moved me to another position. You never saw me go on the football field and try to find an excuse. And I'm not going to listen to excuses from guys from top-notch colleges with exceptional talent that goes out there and want to feel sorry for themselves. And, you know, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine the frustration is palpable, not just among, you know, among people covering the team, but also the fans there as well, because it's not just this year. I mean, you guys, they haven't won a playoff game since 2005. Like, what is it like kind of around that building, around that team, when it just seems like every time they get some momentum like they did the last couple of years, the club seems to take one or two steps back like this year?
Well, it used to be the fans were always pro-team, man. It was always the players' fault. It was just that and the other. And, you know, they always wanted to make a change. Now the fans are more or less wanting a change to stay stable at the quarterback position, with the team, with the coaches, and they want the front office people to either stick to something or get the right people in place. You know, fans used to be just happy, I think, because guys were wearing burgundy and gold instead of saying, well, I want guys wearing burgundy and gold that's out there producing and having success. Now I'm starting to hear a lot of fans begin to think and feel like I do. You know, I know, like, when I went to Philadelphia, yeah, they love the team, but if you're not doing your job, they're going to let you know about it. It wasn't that way here, and now it's starting to change a little bit.
Hey, Brian, what are your thoughts on Kirk Cousins, man? You know, I know here – in Denver, we got a lot of fans here who aren't happy with our quarterback situation and would like to entertain the thought of having Kirk Cousins. My thoughts are the Redskins in their situation, having developed this quarterback, I don't think they'll let him go to where he can be an option for Denver Broncos or any other team for that matter. What are your thoughts on that?
I like him. You know, I really like Kirk Cousins. I think when you begin to look at the numbers in depth, Kirk is as good as any quarterback out there. But when you look at the team as a whole, okay, if you don't have a running game, it's going to be hard to become a stick passer. And then you don't have receivers that are living up to the hype that people expected. They let two 1,000-yard receivers go. They brought in Terrell Pryor, who I think never got anywhere close to what they thought he was going to be. Josh Dobson is starting to have some success when he gets an opportunity. But you have Jordan Reed, one of the best tight ends in this league, but when he's healthy. You know, he's not healthy all the time. He participated in six games this year. I would say he played in four. The other two, he was just out there. He couldn't do anything for himself, couldn't protect himself, couldn't really help the team. Now, if you have a quarterback who's still putting up numbers and having success with those guys, then if you want to put some people around him, have some better receiver play, have a running game at least, and then he had four of his offensive linemen out for a few games. Three of them was out most games. So he's been playing shorthanded and still going out there and having success. I think he's a good quarterback. You know, I think a lot of people here don't like him because of they were in love with Robert Griffin III. I mean, Robert couldn't stay healthy either. Kirk Cousins comes in, and then he's always available. The guy gets beat up on the football field, but he's available to play every game. And I think he's corrected a lot of the interceptions this year, which Every quarterback throws interceptions at one point or another.
Right. Now, do you think the Redskins would allow him to test the market by not paying him? Or do you think he would be up for leaving?
I don't know what the Redskins would do. I can't put my hands on what this team would do. The first year he came out, they offered him this low deal, and they put him on a $19 million franchise tag. Last year they put him on a $24 million. It's $34 million this year.
Mm-hmm.
So when you begin to look at that, now that 19, 24, and 34 will completely count all against the cap all that year.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking about having salary cap space, it would be smart to try and sign him to a deal. You manipulate the contract for the first 2 years to make it like 19, 20, where you have more money to spend on some other people. Supposedly, the salary cap is $179 million. They have $108 invested into next year. That's $71 million. They can sign their quarterback and still get some other people. Will they do it? Because I think what has happened, Doc Walker, my colleague on Rendo, says the Redskins, when they like somebody, they like a great, like a St. Bernard. They lick all over you, slobber all over you. They haven't slobbered all over Kirk. So the question is, do they really, really like him? Do they respect him enough, mm-hmm. like a lot of people I'm starting to see and hear? I've had guys on other teams that didn't like Kirk Cousins. Now they go to a team and they have to start looking at the quarterback position and come back and say, Beeman, you're right about Kirk Cousins. This guy really gets the ball in his hand and gets to the right people. He doesn't have the right people around him. So a lot of people's mindset are changing about him, but are the Redskins, is Dan Snyder, is Bruce Allen, are those guys changing? But I know Jay Gruden loves him.
And, it's always about plan B, too, right? Because if you're not going to sign Kirk Cousins to a long-term contract, what are you going to do? And I think that's the big question there for Washington, don't you think?
Good question. Everybody talk about Colt McCoy. I don't see Colt McCoy as the guy. And again, if not Kirk Cousins, who else are you going to get? If you get somebody of his status, you got to pay them that money, too. If you let Kirk go, now you're destined to get somebody. So you end up paying somebody else money that they don't deserve. But a guy that has grown up in your system, been here since 2012, don't miss games once he became a starter, has played, I think, very well over the last 3 years. Then you let him go and you bring somebody else in. Now he's basically taking a step back. And I think the fans here in Washington, I've been here since 1990, they don't need to keep having to take a step back. They're invested in this football team, and they need to see something through at one point. I don't think they do that enough. They've had, eight quarterbacks? Was eight coaches in the last 17, 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
Three of those coaches spent 12 years here. Five of those coaches spent those other 5 to 6 years here. So, it's time to let somebody stay alone to try and see if something can work out by building something. Because every time you bring in a new coach, they change up the offense, they change up the defense, and that's always taking a step backwards.
So, locally, how warm is the seat for Jay Gruden? I mean, you make great points, and honestly, I think that's the right mentality to have, but, fans can be fickle just a little bit sometimes and impatient. So how warm is that seat right now for Jay Gruden?
Well, the fans that never liked him don't like him now. They don't like him before. The fans that always have felt, and I think there's a lot of fans that are very intelligent when it comes to football. They understand you go through a season and all five of your offensive linemen were banged up or hurt at one point. They started the game with two guys that they signed like that Wednesday, and they started them on Saturday because two other guys couldn't make it. Two other starters had to be pulled out of the game. They had four backups, and basically two backups and two guys off the street, and one starter, Morgan Moses, playing that game. Didn't Morgan Moses get hurt in that game? Jordan Reed doesn't play. So you basically saw Kirk Cousins playing like he was in the fourth quarter of the first preseason game, and he still was having success. So I think people are giving him that leeway to say, let's see what he can do with this same team being healthy.
We're talking to Brian Mitchell from NBC Sports Washington. Of course, also the league's all-time leader in all-purpose yardage. I have to mention that.
Yes.
That's a Hall of Fame number, by the way, that you got. In all-purpose yardage.
We'll see. I wish I had a vote.
Oh, I know, man. Yeah, they need a special category for returners, man. You would definitely be in there, man.
I wanted to ask you, since you know so much about returning and special teams, I wanted to ask you, what is Jamison Crowder doing wrong on punt returns, and what's going wrong on special teams in general for Washington?
Uh, he's pressing, and I think that's all right. I talked to him the other night. I think what has happened with Jameson Crowder is, you know, he was hurt all training camp. He was hurt during the preseason. He came into the season, and now they let DeSean Jackson go. They let Pierre Garçon go. They've been talking all offseason about Jameson Crowder being that guy and stepping up. So you haven't been there. So he steps on the field, and he forces. He had a lot of turnovers early in the season. Then he settled down, and he had two or three good games in a row. And just like anything, anybody that plays golf, you know, when you start thinking you have it, you don't. So he felt he had it, and all of a sudden it creeped back up on him. I talked to him the other night, and I'll say this. I don't think special teams on this football team has been stressed for a long time. I don't think they really go into it. I look at little things that happen that should never happen. On a kickoff, when you kickoff return, the ball should never, ever hit the ground. Somebody should be able to see it and catch it. They let a ball hit the ground, it's a turnover for them. They got guys catching the ball on the kickoff a half yard from out of bounds and then running out of bounds. Nope, you just step out of bounds, catch the ball, you get it up on the 40-yard line. Another time, cover the punt, guy catches the ball and run in. Is the coach teaching them anything? See, I like Ben Kawika. He was in the military. I respect the hell out of that. But that doesn't make me automatically respect you as a coach. I'm going to judge you based on being a coach. If being a helicopter pilot that he was in the military and the things he did for our country, I salute him. But being a special teams coach, he hasn't been very good. And then when you don't have a coach that's giving you what you need to know, and then they don't stress it enough as a whole organization, you're going to always have problems with it. We've been on team. I'm sure, Steve, you know when Mike was there. And when Joe Gibbs was here, special teams was as important as anything else because it can give you great field position or it can back up an offense and give your defense a better chance of having success against you.
Absolutely. So, Brian, I'm sure you've noticed, everybody's kind of noticed all the injuries that the NFL is having, you know, guys hurting Achilles tendons, ACLs. Why do you think that's happening now? It didn't happen this much, it didn't seem like, back when we played.
I think it's because of the preparation. Right? And listen, I know what the NFLPA and the NFL was trying to do, and I think a lot of it is a smoke screen to the public to say, look, we're trying to help them out. But if you're playing bumper cars, which is football, you have to be practicing bumper cars. You cannot go all off season no contact. Basically, there's no contact in training camp, you know. And then all of a sudden, when the preseason games start, go full speed. You know, we're all old enough, I think, you remember when you would buy a car and they would tell you you have to have a break-in period first.
Yeah.
They don't have a break-in period per se. They go from 0 to 100 as soon as preseason starts, and you begin to see the injuries pop up. You know, and I think what has happened is a lot of coaches don't get a lot out of their players because they're so concerned about the 14 days that they have to have contact. You know, they worried about pulling guys back. Well, if someone is hurt, the backup has to be prepared to play. So if I'm going to limit practice because the starter is hurt, I am not allowing my backup to be really ready to play in a football game. So guys out there getting another thing, guessing. Defensive players don't know what they can do. Can I hit him? Can I not hit
right.
him? If I don't hit him, he continues up the sideline and score a touchdown like I saw happen in the Steelers game the other day. But if I hit him, is the ref going to throw a flag? So they've made it to where everybody is now playing a guessing game. And when you're guessing on a football field, something bad is going to happen.
Last couple here for you, Brian. Really do appreciate it. You mentioned Jordan Reed, and I mean, this guy has the ability. We've seen it to be one of the top end receiving tight ends in the game. But again, health has always been a big problem for him. What's his future with that organization right now?
If he comes back next year and he goes to the same thing he did this year, I think at this point right now, they should be trying to find out a way they can remove. Because if he can't be on the football field, he counts $10.2 million against your cap this year. I think it's $10.3 or $9.3 next year. It's going to be at $9 million or more against your cap. If that guy's not on the football field, that's not doing you any good. So they need to start figuring out a way to start trying to have some of his brothers. Vernon Davis, he's 33 years old. He's not going to continue having the year that he had this year. So you got to start moving on. If the guy you're expecting to be out there playing is not on the field, not available for to be out there on Sundays, that's going to be a major problem because I know most of his offense is based on what Jordan Reed is going to be doing, and he's been gone more than he's been here this year.
And one last question on Jonathan Allen. He hasn't played in a couple months, and news broke this week that he's not going to be brought back off IR. How had he progressed before he got hurt, and what's his long-term future there?
He was the best football player on the team. He destroyed people in the middle. He was faster than the guards. He was penetrating. He made it tough for a quarterback to step up in the pocket, which allowed Matt Ioannidis next to him to be one-on-one, who's as strong as an ox. So those two guys, those two young guys, the first-year guy and the second-year guy, were destroying the interior of offensive lines, which made it easier for the outside guys to come in. Once Jonathan got hurt and they started double-teaming Matt Ioannidis, quarterback started to be able to stay in the pocket, step up in the pocket. The outside guys couldn't get to him. And then all of a sudden you start to see the limits that they had in the secondary. So I think he was the key part to the success the defense had early on. So they need to have him come back. And then to try and bring him back these last two, I know you'll want to see a young guy get some more experience, but nah, it's not going to do him any good. He went through Alabama for 4 years. For 3 years. Right. So he's ready to go.
Well, hey, B-Mitch, man, we really appreciate it. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know how connected you are there in the D.C. community. I lived up there for about just under 5 years. We didn't get a chance to connect like I would have liked to, but, man, best wishes to you. Keep up the good work, man.
Oh, man, thank you. And everybody, Steve was my host when I went to Arkansas to visit. It was 1986? Wow.
Yeah, wow. Man, that's crazy, isn't it? Yep.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the Horsing Around podcast. We'll talk to you next week.